from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Warnings about the coming fire season turned into reality this week as wildfires erupted in San Diego County, burning over 10,000 acres, prompting thousands to evacuate and forcing the cancellation of graduation ceremonies at Cal State San Marcos. Ahead on Forum, we'll get the latest on the fires in Southern California and what they may portend for the long, dry summer ahead. And then we'll turn our attention to the race for mayor in San Jose, a wide-open contest to replace outgoing mayor Chuck Reed. The fire season and the race to lead San Jose. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Students at Cal State San Marcos got a reprieve from finals this week, but probably not in the way they wanted. Wildfires forced the evacuation of the campus, halting not only final exams, but forcing the cancellation of graduation ceremonies as well. Wildfires in Southern California have now burned over 10,000 acres, prompting widespread evacuation orders in San Diego County. Firefighters hope to get a break today as winds diminish. And so in our first half hour this morning, we want to get the latest on the fires in Southern California and then look ahead to what may well be a scary fire season throughout the state. Joining us first, Daniel Berlin, spokesperson for CAL FIRE. Mr. Berlin, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, good morning to you. Definitely been a busy couple of days for us.
Yes, indeed. And good news this morning in terms of the winds. Why don't you bring us up to date on what you're seeing this morning?
Yeah, yesterday we started to see the winds shift coming onshore, meaning the wind was coming from the ocean, bringing cooler temperatures, higher humidity. That's obviously going to aid us in this firefight. Now, there are still several fires that are still burning. But these cooler temperatures and the wind that has diminished significantly, that's all going to allow us to get in there and make some good progress towards containment.
And where are you with containment? There has been, nine or ten. I'm not sure of the exact number at this point in terms of the number of fires, but how many are contained? Which are still the ones that you're most concerned about?
We still have eight active wildland fires burning. The main fire, though, yesterday that was the most active was just out Santa Marcos, as you mentioned, the one that was threatening CSU's San Marcos. That fire definitely raged in the afternoon as the Santa Ana winds picked up. Today, though, those winds have died down. That's going to allow us to really make good progress. That fire, though, has charred over 1,200 acres, and this morning we expect that acreage to grow as we continue to map it. But all in all, the conditions we're experiencing right now are kinder dry. To have Santa Ana winds in San Diego is not unheard of. But what's so unusual is to have such strong winds and such dry conditions so early into the year. And unfortunately, as we move into July and into August, the peak summer months, conditions are only going to get drier and the likelihood of much larger fires only goes up.
As far as what we saw yesterday, at least on the news, there were some pretty scary images of fires threatening particular neighborhoods in San Diego County, Carlsbad, and elsewhere. What do we know about how many homes have been damaged and whether or not any neighborhoods continue to be threatened?
Yesterday, we saw extreme fire behavior on the fire in San Marcos. If you saw any photos or any video, there were fire whirlwinds. There were, huge flame lengths. Because of just how dry it is, there is so much fuel to burn, and you add those Santa Ana winds, and that's where we're seeing extreme fire behavior that we would likely see typically in late summer, not here in early spring. Now, our outlook over the next couple of months continues to show a hot, drying trend. However, this weekend, a nice little bit of a reprieve.
Daniel Berlin, spokesperson for CAL FIRE. Daniel, thanks for giving us the latest.
Yeah, thank you.
We're going to be joined now by Eric Anderson, staff reporter at KPBS, who has been out covering this story this week. Eric, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Eric, what's the latest from what you have seen, both yesterday when you were out on the story, what you're seeing this morning? It sounds from what Daniel Berlin was saying like there's much more optimism about bringing these fires under containment.
He is absolutely correct. The temperatures are much milder this morning. I think the overnight temperatures in much of the coastal region of San Diego County were in the 70s. Yesterday, they were in the 80s. During the day yesterday, I was up at the San Marcos fire on the campus of Cal State San Marcos, and I watched a hillside behind campus burn over. And this hillside was completely covered with fuel. It was just thick brush that was dry and primed to burn. So once it got caught on fire, it burned the entire hillside over the ridge from where we were and down into the neighborhood. And that's where a couple of homes, two that we saw directly, burned up as a result. It's thick brush on this hillside, and the homes are kind of tucked into that brush. You know, people want to live in an area that looks a little bit more rural, but they want to be close to the city, and that's kind of what you get there. But the temperature yesterday in the afternoon was about 110 degrees where we were, very,
wow,
very hot. And the firefighters that we talked to said that the fire itself was creating its own weather, and that's like the worst of all possible situations for a firefighter. You know, it's sucking in the oxygen. That's where you get those little whirlies of flame going up into the sky. You get the really tall flames that way. It's a huge plume of smoke, and the heat gets exacerbated. You know, it's 110 degrees in the, you know, with no fire. It's when you put the fire in there that raises the temperature even more.
And what do we know, Eric, about the cause? Some reporting this morning about the possibility of arson. What do we know right now about how these fires took place?
Well, we can tell you a couple of things about the cause. The first is what the fire officials will tell you about any fire, and they still have investigations going on. Usually it takes a couple of weeks for them to kind of figure out exactly what it was that starts a major wildfire. A couple of days ago, we heard a San Diego County Supervisor, Bill Horn, the day that the nine fires were burning in the county 2 days ago, say during one of his media press conferences that he thought it was awfully suspicious that there were this many fires in this many locations. He had been to a couple of locations where they believed that a couple of the fires had started, and he said that they were in areas where there was heavy fuel, it was kind of out of the public eye, and there was access to a road, and he thought that was suspicious. Yesterday, our sheriff's department sheriff said publicly, of course, the investigation is still ongoing, but he says, you know, there are things that will come out in the days to come as they do that investigation. They nail down exactly what it was that caught the fires. Now, something that's not directly related to the fires that burned, there were a couple of teenagers that were arrested in Escondido yesterday. They were attempting to start fires in the Escondido area. Police at the, you know, they got calls from residents, responded to those calls, apprehended the two people, and have them in custody. Their actions did not start a fire, but that's something that they were trying to do. So definitely a possibility, and like I said, we'll probably know more from the officials as they do their investigations.
And last, Eric, any damage estimates at this point? Doesn't sound like there's going to be more neighborhoods threatened, at least as of today. What do we know about how many structures destroyed, how much damage that's been done?
I don't think we have the total numbers just yet, but what we do know is that during the course of these fires this week, eight houses have definitely been lost. There was an 18-unit condominium complex in Carlsbad that was burned out. A couple of businesses there were burned, and there have been several houses in the San Marcos area as a result of the extreme fire activity yesterday that got damaged. You know, the county was very good this time during this firestorm activity of getting word out to residents. They, you know, since 2007, they've installed a reverse 911 system so that when there's a major emergency, they call out to people's homes, they call out to people's cell phones, and they called out to, you know, more than 100,000 during the course in different parts of the county. More than 100,000 calls were made asking people, you know, not to go into their neighborhoods or to stay away from certain areas because it just wasn't safe because of the fire. One person was found dead yesterday in and around the Carlsbad fire. There is some suspicion that it's a transient. The body was badly burned but found in an area where transients frequent. And they don't know exactly what the relationship, whether it was just someone who got caught in the flames and wasn't prepared or whether it was some other reason that might have brought that. And they don't know the identity yet of the person. But that so far has been the only fatality in what has been a pretty sketchy week in terms of wildfire activity in the county.
Eric Anderson, reporter for KPBS in San Diego. Eric, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
Bill Stewart joins us now. He's co-director of the University of California, Berkeley Center for Fire Research and Outreach. Bill, good morning.
Good morning.
So we heard from those reports about how it's basically August in May. I mean, is that your assessment? You were down there recently surveying what the look of the land was. Give us your sense of what we're looking at.
We're getting the high winds that we typically have in August. The plants are still not totally dried out, so this fire behavior was extreme, but not very extreme. It only is going to get drier, and it only is going to burn faster and hotter. And I think this is just a kind of as long as we have these windy days and starts from whether it's just a cigarette butt or someone starting it, there's going to be more fires. And when it's windy, it's going to move much faster and put a lot of people at risk down there.
I was interested in Eric Anderson's reporting from the site of the Cal State San Marcos campus, where he looked out at this hillside that he said was just covered with brush, and boom, there it went. Is that what we have to be most concerned about right now, that there is so much fuel, as I guess is the appropriate way to describe this, and that it's so close to where people are living, working, studying?
Well, that is Southern California. What firefighters and we describe as fuel is also endangered species habitat, beautiful green open space, and it's the natural vegetation of Southern California. And so when it burns, the whole hillside will catch on fire and burn. It'll resprout next year and start slowly again. But for people, the real challenge is when it's burning is you're going to see those interesting fire whirlwinds that show up really well on television. But the real risk is from the embers that are shooting off of that are smaller than my pinky. But those are going to shower onto the houses and the buildings and the condominium complexes. Maybe may end up being like maybe, six of these little pieces on the size of a dinner plate. But if there's leaves and grasses and brooms outside the house, those are the things that will start smoldering and catch houses on fire.
Give me some sense, Bill Stewart, of what's going on with the winds and what Eric referred to as that it was creating its own weather system. What does that mean? I mean, I think of winds being dangerous because obviously they're going to exacerbate the spread of the fire, but it sounds like they do something more than that. What's going on?
Yeah, the big winds that come off the high desert, what they call the Santa Ana winds, they come and they're blowing anywhere between 30 and 80 miles an hour. I was just down there and they were getting those. Then if there's an ignition, the fire starts. So then all this fuel, it's burning up. And it basically, it just starts to interact with itself. It just creates a tornado coming from the ground up. And there just enough heat is generated that it starts swirling and moving around. And sometimes it goes up and sometimes it crashes back down. And it's strong enough to actually break trees off. In the rim fire, there are areas, thousands of acres
near Yosemite. Yeah.
Where the trees didn't burn from the bottom, they were crushed from above when the fire weather collapsed and came down and actually broke 2 and 3 foot diameter trees, just cracked them off. So yeah, it's very powerful.
Bill Stewart joining us. He's co-director of the University of California, Berkeley Center for Fire Research and Outreach. If you have a question or a concern about this year's fire season, about what you ought to do as a homeowner, you can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also post your thoughts or questions on our Facebook page or on our website. Give us your sense as you've surveyed the state as to what are the most concerning spots, hot spots, if you will, around the state, or whether or not that just means the entire state right now?
Well, I think a lot of it is it's going to be very different. Southern California, they're frankly used to having fairly large fires, but there's a lot more people subdivisions right next to these potentially burning hillsides, and how they're going to react to that in terms of evacuation, planning ahead. If they get caught, do they know to get into their swimming pool or their bathtub to survive if their house is going to be burned over? And then are people really starting to look real carefully? Do they have lots of flammable stuff that they've left around their house, that that broom out there, the weeds, that pampas grass they planted because it looked pretty in January, but it's now just, how are they going to treat those? And getting everyone to think that through. In California, a big challenge is we found the same thing we have in urban forestry, that people that own the hose, work by the vegetation, but renters, they're not going to spend a lot of their own money doing all these types of things. They might not be there next year. So there's a lot of challenge of people that don't own their home that are still living there. Who's responsible, and are those kind of fire prevention activities for the small things going to really get done? And that's part of our outreach messages. We need to figure out how to get to apartment dwellers and students and everyone else to make sure these little things are cleaned up. So they're, because many areas are going to have fires, fire risk in come start in August, and it's going to go all the way till Christmas.
Before we get into it, and we'll walk through some of the things that all homeowners ought to be aware of, I just want to have you give us a sketch of the state. Last year, of course, the most disastrous fire was the Rim Fire near Yosemite. But really, is any place safe? Are we concerned about, you know, the all around the Bay Area, the Oakland Hills, Napa, Sonoma, the Sierra? I mean, is this really a kind of statewide danger zone this summer?
Well, it really depends. The danger zone, like for instance, the Rim Fire burned 260,000 acres, but very few structures got lost because the luck of the zoning, it's most of the land that burned was total wildland. If we'd had that 260,000 acre or even a 26,000 acre patch in the hills, the East Bay Hills around Lafayette, that would have been a true emergency. And so it's really the acres that are burning right next to where we have residences and important power lines and infrastructure. Those are what really determines the risk. So it is going to be the East Bay if we get windy days, all of Southern California, and the foothills where people are living are the really riskiest areas. Frankly, if we have large fires in rural, a Rim Fire size fire scenario in Lassen National Park, as long as people have been evacuated, that's what those forests used to look like. But when it's really risky is when it's near where people are living permanently, or when you have wilderness camps like Camp Tawonga, Berkeley, Tuolumne Camp, where you know urbanites are out there,
right? Yeah. But except for the extreme sort of north of the Humboldt kind of area, everywhere in the state, it to some degree, is at risk.
Everywhere is below normal in terms of precipitation, and so that means all the vegetation is going to dry out much sooner. What's really going to drive the number of acres burnt is how many windy days we have. And that's the correlation. We could actually have very little, but the odds are we're going to have, you know, we're going to have 10 to 20 Santa Ana and Diablo days and stuff. And those are when, you know, if the start happens there, those are the ones that are really hard to control.
Let's go through what people ought to do. If you're living, let's say, in the East Bay Hills, you mentioned Lafayette or that area, and we all, of course, remember what happened 20-some years ago in the East Bay Hills. What should people – let's sort of start from the outskirts of the boundaries of your property and then work back closer to your house.
Well, you know, there's a lot of vegetation around their house, but I think that, you know, people really think they have so many hours they can work on this is treating the stuff from really the house out to think, you know, what's on their deck, you know, what's
okay,
in their
gutters.
Okay, let's
do it the other way around then. So start from the
They
the
really need
zone.
To look, you know, look at their, what we have toolkits on our fire research and outreach site of just thinking about all the things. If embers flew onto your house, what would start slowly smoldering and in a half an hour be a fire?
So what don't people think about that they probably should? I mean, it's sort of, you can sort of imagine looking out at your yard and thinking, oh, I've got some dry shrubs out there. I'll do something about that. But what don't people think about on their deck, for example?
Often they don't remember that, you know, did they leave leaves in the corner? Did they sweep them all out? Did they leave a broom out there to catch on fire? Is there a mat to knock your mud off that's actually made that could catch on fire if embers flew on it? If there's the kindling to make the fire that, you know, you only do have fires in the winter, but you left it out on the deck because it's a nice place to be. All those little things that could catch on fire. And if you're evacuated and slowly smolder and then catch the wall on fire. And, you know, whether embers can get caught in some of the woodwork you have in your house. Just looking at all those little places and double checking and cleaning those out. If the gutter is full of pine needles and you have now with many people have plastic gutters, that's going to melt, and then, you know, you're going to have this other problem. So those are those things. Get up on a ladder and look around and just clean those things out is really important.
It's an interesting thought. I think about cleaning out the gutters, you know, before the rainy season because you don't want to get them clogged up in the rainy season. You're saying the time to really make sure they're clear is now.
Well, if you have a one-story house, I'm not sure about it. I tell people a two-story house, but it's a totally different issue. Yeah, that's, you know, it's those gutters, especially if leaves have blown in. If you're like me, you don't think about cleaning your gutters when the summertime comes. But if that's a little linear bed of fuel, then you could have a problem there. It's worth actually thinking about those. If you can safely get up there and get that stuff out of there, move those pine needles, or if they have needles right next to your house, rake them back 5 feet. That makes a big difference.
What are we beginning to experience, do you think, Bill Stewart, as someone who researches this question? It's very tempting, of course, to think about climate change, to think about the kind of dry winter that we had, the hot temperatures that we just had, for example, this week here in the Bay Area with temperatures in the 90s reaching triple digits in some places. Is the future of climate change now? I mean, are we at the point now where this is going to become the new normal?
Well, we've always had a lot of variable weather, but a lot of the research now is coming out that we're going to have more extreme days. And so just the average might only go up a small amount, but if we have five more really extreme hot, windy days, that's what's really going to drive the acres burnt. And because we have more people living near, we're going to get into basically emergency catastrophic situations much more often, even if the average just goes up a little bit. If we have four or five more of these really high, windy, dry, super dry days, it's an exponential function.
So what does that mean in terms of how we need to change our behavior? Obviously, people aren't going to, you know, there isn't going to be a mass exodus from the East Bay Hills. People are going to live there,
right,
or wherever, you know, in Southern California. What do we need to do as far as changing our structures, the way in which we live, the way in which we use water? What are the sort of behavioral changes we now need to make?
Yeah, I think that's, looking back to water is a good point. When, you know, in the 1970s, we, you know, for people who were there here, we lived through those 3-year drought we had then. We used a lot of water in 1975, and everyone started to turn off the water when they, you know, when they're washing the dishes in their hands. And really to change just the way people live their daily life. I think we did water conservation. We started then. We still probably have not changed the way everyone lives in terms of all those small things of actually remember to clean the deck, not because you're fastidious, but because of the potential for fire risk and doing those things naturally. So that's when there's a homeowners association meeting. That's one of the things they talk about, not just you know, who's using the tennis courts, but, you know, has everybody actually done these things? And so the neighbors are helping neighbors, and you kind of build that kind of a new esprit de corps or way of thinking about these landscapes.
And what about it in terms of landscaping your own space? Let's say you want to make something that not only uses less water for all the obvious reasons, and you don't want to have a big lawn or whatever, but should you also be thinking not only about what you don't want to have that will consume a lot of water, but will also make your landscape safer? Is there a way to look at your landscape from that point of view,
yeah,
not just from a water use?
Yeah, that's one of my colleagues, Sabrina Drill in Los Angeles. She was a co-author of a book where she looked at which is called Safe Landscaping, and looked at all the plants that basically you can buy in a store in Southern California and rated them good, dubious, you know, and maybe. But just to get people to think, you know, if you're going to plant, you know, here are the plants that have purple flowers that aren't going to be flammable in August. And these are the ones to really avoid. But you basically need that, you know, have that guidebook before you go out there and say, I want to have these four colors in my backyard. You know, which ones are flammable, which ones are not. And, you know, we didn't do that 10 years ago, and that's really those plants that people put in their yard make a huge difference on what's going to catch on fire.
And briefly, Bill, where can we find those sorts of resources, from what flowers to what flowers, yeah, to plant, to what you ought to do as far as making your home safe and defensible property and all?
Yeah, so
that.
One thing on our the fire research and outreach, our website under resources, we have a number of those publications of both landscaping guides for people that live in the foothills where you have conifer trees versus also guidelines for people that live in Southern California.
And you can find these all at the UC Berkeley Center for Fire Research and Outreach website.
Yeah, so you just Google that, you'll find it.
All right. Bill Stewart, co-director of that Center for Fire Research and Outreach at the University of California, Berkeley. Thanks very much,
Great.
Bill.
Thank you very much.
In our next half hour, we're going to turn to the subject of the race for mayor in San Jose. Mayor Chuck Reed is being termed out of office. Who will be next? We'll explore that coming up next here on Forum on KQED.